Yeah, these details.
You're ready.
Thank you.
I want you to compare these two quotes. And the two quotes I'm going to give you come from significantly different worldviews. Okay? First one. And you know this one. This is my father's world. He shines in all that's
fair.
By the way, that word fair, isn't that a fascinating word? It is. You know, philosophers talk about how that this one realm of philosophy, what's called axiology sometimes, is made up of two parts, ethics and aesthetics. Ethics, of course, has to do with morality, right and wrong. Aesthetics has to do with beauty. And they put those together, right and wrong and beauty, put them together into one category called axiology. And so how do those two fit? Well, you get a clue with that word fair. Because sometimes we use the word fair to talk about beauty. You know, so-and-so, she's a fair lady. You're pointing, that's nice. But we also sometimes use it to talk about right and wrong, don't we? That was not fair. He shines in all that's fair. Now, that's the first one. Think about that. This is my father's world. He shines in all that's fair. The second one. There was a time when my little soul shone and was uplifted by the starry enigma of the sky. In other words, there was a time when I was like Maltby Babcock. There was a time when I looked at the stars and I said, wow, incredible, amazing. That has now disappeared. I go out and look at the stars in the same way I look at wallpaper. H.G. Wells. It's just wallpaper. It's just more of the same. I'm going to suggest to us that maturing people are learning to increasingly see like Maltby Babcock sees. Not losing the wonder like H.G. Wells, but actually come to the place where you just, this is incredible. This is my father's world. Acts 17, the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. For in him we live and move and have our being, our existence. Well, this session is about how can we cultivate that sense in ourselves of just the wonder of God and the world he's made. How can we take off our shoes when we're with a common bush? So I'm going to suggest eight ways. Eight ways for us to pay attention, to come awake, to see the wonder, the design, the beauty, the complexity. So I'm convinced that Christians ought to be as curious as anybody about the world. So eight ways to take off our shoes. The first one is to look and keep looking until you are breathless. You see, if you're not breathless, you haven't looked long enough. I love these words from 1 Kings 10. And when the queen of Sheba had seen all the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food on his table, the seating of his officials, and the attendants of his servants, their clothing, his cupbearers, his burnt offerings that he offered at the house of the Lord, there was no more breath in her. Now that's King James English. No more breath in her. She was dead, apparently. No, figurative language. This is just amazing. She had looked, she had seen, until she was breathless. Someone has said, and this is great, this is a great line for teachers. If you want your students to bleed, you have to hemorrhage. If you want your students to bleed, you have to hemorrhage. And so that's part of what's happening here. We ourselves are looking, studying, seeing, and we're doing it until we start, this is good stuff. And then when we can hemorrhage, well, it allows them to at least bleed. So, we look until we're breathless. Second, we need to identify a wonderful focus. So as we're looking at things, whatever it is we're studying, it might be mice, it might be light, it might be magnetism. We're looking at that, we're thinking about it, we're learning about it, we're getting breathless. And then we identify some wonderful focus, a focus that is full of wonder. Something about this subject that'll even get my students excited. So I'm asking, what's the wow here in this? What's new? What's surprising? What is it that they maybe haven't seen or experienced that can capture something significant? You know, it was years of teaching electricity and magnetism before I found these two wonderful things. And this is an example of that wonderful focus. It's also a great example of what we've been talking in here about discrepant events. So, you know that when you drop things at the surface of the earth, that they accelerate at 9.81 meters per second squared. That's the rate of acceleration, and that's what it looks like. Okay, that's accelerating. We could do it a little more. This is a copper pipe. It is not a magic copper pipe. It is just a garden variety copper pipe, except that it's a little thicker than normal. But a regular one would work, just not as good. These are two neodymium magnets, just regular old neodymium magnets. Now, admittedly, neodymium magnets are strong. But, okay, nothing really exceptional here. But remember, things drop or they accelerate at 9.81 meters per second squared at the surface of the Earth. Now, what I'm going to do is instead of dropping it here, I'm going to drop it here where it goes through the tube. And we will notice what happens. So, I drop it. Now you say, okay, got it, magnetism. Notice, it's not attracted to that. It is a magnet. Where is something metallic? Okay, and it's a strong magnet. It's not, notice it, doesn't. And yet, when we drop it, and I'm not doing anything, just dropping it through is all I'm doing. See why I said it's a discrepant event? What'd you say?
Isn't it even spinning in there?
It does, just a little bit. Now, this is not a course in magnetism or anything like that. By the way, it does have to do with magnetism and electricity. It's a great, great way to talk about those things. But I'm just giving that as an illustration of finding a full of wonder focus that I can use when I'm teaching magnetism. So get the idea. Okay, because that's something that's, ooh, that's a little different. Let's say I'm teaching a unit on momentum. And you might want to talk about momentum in terms of falling bodies. Notice when a ping pong or a golf ball bounces on a surface that's not terribly solid. You see, let's see, if I drop it from 2 feet, about a third of the way, would you agree?
ping pong ball, if I drop it from that, I'm a little over halfway, right? Now the question might be, what if I drop the two together? If I would drop them together, what would you predict? If I put them together, would the golf ball bounce higher or not as high as when I did it by itself? How many of you think it would be higher? How many think it would be lower? How many think it would be the same? Some of you are agnostics. how about the ping pong ball when we drop them together? Is it gonna bounce higher? Lower? Don't know? Don't care? Let's try it. Okay, we're gonna drop them here. About the same height. Now, what about the golf ball? Did it bounce higher or lower?
Lower.
Some of you actually saw that.
Is that the equivalent of a power bounce on a trampoline?
What's that?
Is that the equivalent of a power bounce on a trampoline?
It's related, yeah.
Did they both hit the surface?
No. This hit. I dropped them like that. Okay, so clearly what we're talking about here is momentum, and the momentum of the ping pong ball is transferred to the golf ball is transferred to that, et cetera, so on. But again, that's not our subject, so we move on. Three. Third way to develop wonder, to help our students take off our shoes, is content first, then the surprise, then the wonderful focus. Okay. So what I've found over the years, when I first started teaching using demonstrations and so on, I'd like to just do them. But I found that once you've done the demonstration, you're done. But you have 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes to build up to that thing. So use it. So content first. Let's take a common garden variety chemical reaction. And we'll take acetic acid, or more commonly called
vinegar.
Acetic acid, and we're going to add to it sodium bicarbonate. Now, and that is more commonly called
baking soda.
And that is going to produce or yield what?
Carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide is one of the things. What else?
Poison.
What?
Poison.
Not necessarily. There, in certain conditions, it could. We're not going to create any noises here, though. This is one that everyone has seen, so I've needed to come up with some little different way of doing that particular reaction. You may have seen what I'm going to do, but you may not have. So we're going to add this plus this, and we're going to produce this, first of all, which is, it's going to be some of this and some of this.
Sodium acetate.
Sodium acetate. Yes, good. Sodium acetate plus the carbon dioxide and plus some water. So we just put H2 over there. Actually, if I was going to teaching this for real, I would go ahead and put the chemical formulas for everything up here, talk about what they mean. I would talk about how that the carbon dioxide that is produced is CO2, and that is something that we breathe out. It's something that our bodies produce, as well as this reaction. I'd probably also talk about how carbon monoxide is quite different than carbon dioxide. While both of them are colorless and do not have a smell, this one is very safe. We're breathing it out.
We can, it's in our atmosphere, we can breathe it in and out, but this one at very low concentrations will kill you. And the only difference is the number of oxygen atoms that are bound into a molecule here. So we talk about that. We'll talk about the different kinds of reactions. The four basic kind of chemical reaction and how this is a kind of displacement reaction. So I do all that stuff. But of course, everybody knows something's coming eventually. Talk about how the carbon dioxide is, both of these are heavier than the nitrogen and oxygen that's in the air. And so they tend to settle. If you have a concentration of carbon dioxide, it settles out. Which means that if we produce some of this, it will say, if we create it here in the container, and we'll just generate it by... Okay, we're making the gas, carbon dioxide. It's filling that up with the gas. I wouldn't even have to put that on, but that keeps it in there. We said it's heavier in air. We also could talk about how that flames, candle flames, need oxygen in order to burn. But so if we fill the space around that flame with carbon dioxide, it would not be able to burn. And so let's see if we can do that. And what we're going to do is, Jason, if you would come up here, and we're going to try to pour carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is a fluid, just like water is a fluid. We could pour water down this trough, couldn't we? And that would put the flame out. We're going to try to pour some. Yeah, if you would stand off to the side so everyone can see. I'll move it over here. And hold it about like that. Give me a little bit more of a curve if you would there. And hold it so that, yep, right like that. That'll be beautiful. Now let's see if we have enough carbon dioxide to dump down our trough. So you teach first, you get all this content out of the way, and then you do your surprise. Okay. Number four. You surround your presentation with the language of mystery, discovery, and wonder. Surround your presentation with the language of mystery, discovery, and wonder. So, one of my favorite, all-time favorite reactions is now, this sodium hydroxide, it's what used to be sold in stores as Red Devil Lye. This stuff, I know of a person who drank a solution accidentally of this, and it ate their esophagus away. This is the stuff you, liquid Drano, is sodium hydroxide. It's the stuff you pour down your drain to clean all the hair and everything like that out. It's this nasty stuff. And then you have hydrochloric acid. This, you can buy this in hardware stores to clean the concrete off of bricks after it's dried. Had a teacher who dumped some of this on her foot. She had sandals on. It was to the bone before she was able to neutralize it with baking soda. Actually, I'm wrong. It was sulfuric acid that she used. This would have done equally well. So, basically what we have here is killer plus killer yield. And this is a double displacement reaction. So, joins with that, and this joins with that molecule, and we get sodium chloride plus HHO, that is water. You get salt water out of this. Now, you want a wonderful demonstration? Mix those two together and then drink it. Remember what we said yesterday? No, we didn't get to it yesterday. Some of you left before we remembered that one of the best demonstrations are the ones where there's a possibility the teacher may die. Okay, now you'll notice. You can just present this as sodium hydroxide plus hydrochloric acid, or an acid plus a base produces a salt and water. But by surrounding it with language like killer plus killer, you start getting the feel for... This is absolutely stunning, isn't it? It really is stunning. You take these two things that individually are just tremendously... they burn. They cause tremendous grief. And yet you put them together and it's just something as simple as salt water. Now, I would use, when you put them together, there's nothing dramatic that happens. So you can't rely on the thing itself to be interesting. If you pour those two things together, you don't see anything. Nothing really changes. By the way, there is ways to make it interesting. I wish so much I could actually have some of these chemicals here and we could do. But if you use phenolphthalein or another indicator, phenolphthalein I like because it's a clear indicator, and you can put it with... the hydrochloric acid, when you add the sodium hydroxide to it and you get to the point where it is totally salt water, or you get right past that point. Actually, let me start this over. I do it the other way. I start with sodium hydroxide. I put the phenolphthalein in it, which means it turns red. So it's a red solution sitting there. And then I start adding some hydrochloric acid. Now again, nothing blows up. Nothing turns colors. Nothing... So it's not very fun, not very wonderful in that sense. But what we do is when we get to the point where it is totally salt water, what happens is at that moment you add one more drop of acid and it turns clear. So that adds a bit of wonder to it. And if you calibrate it right, have the right solutions, the concentrations of each, you can do a drop of one and it turns red. You do another drop and it turns clear. I find that it's okay to say outlandish things in science class if you know what you're talking about. Yeah, be sure you're right. I used to teach that glass is just a very viscous liquid. And you'll find some texts that promote that idea. So, you know, the more viscous something is, the thicker it is. So molasses is much more viscous than water. And glass is a liquid that is just even more viscous. And what I would, and there is some truth to that. But here's the piece that wasn't right. I would say one of the ways we know this is because in cathedral windows, you know, really old windows that have been there for 1,000 years or something like that, at the bottom, they're thicker than at the top. Over 1,000 years, it actually ran down a little bit. That's not true. It'd be cool if it was. But we now know that they actually manufactured them with a little more width at the bottom. So while there is some truth to the viscosity, that it being a viscous liquid, it is not true that over time it actually flows like that. So you know what you're talking about, but it is okay to say things like, imagine we have a gun and we have a bullet. And if we hold the bullet at the same height as the gun barrel, and we fire the gun, and as soon as the bullet comes out here, we drop this one. So here's a bullet coming out, shooting way out there, and this one we drop. This bullet and that bullet will hit the ground at exactly the same time.
Now, I love telling people that because I found many of my students in no way. No way. And then you pull out your demonstrator. And there is you can buy a demonstrator for $30 that actually does. It launches a ball through the air at a parabolic curve and one that goes straight down, and boom, they will hit the ground at the same time. Or, if you're really motivated, and some of you ought to do this, but it's a lot of work, you can build what is called the monkey and the hunter. And what you have is an electromagnet, and you run those wires over to your gun. And so here we have the gun, and you use some kind of, you'd have to put a battery in here, and you'd make a switch out of this, maybe put a wire, two paper clips on either side of your barrel, and put a wire in between them that closes the circuit, meaning that your electromagnet is operating, and then you hang a monkey or whatever there. It's not politically correct to write to draw a monkey as a person. I apologize for that. So this is just say a piece of PVC pipe, and you fire a marble through there, and so it means when the marble comes out of this, it opens the circuit and the monkey will drop. And the fact is that and the monkey will intersect because of what I just said about the bullets and so on. The independence of horizontal and vertical motion of an object in free fall. Yes, sir.
Does it have to be level?
No. That's the point. Yeah. I know.
I mean the angle.
You mean this right here? Do I have to shoot it like this? No, it needs to be pointed right there. If I'm pointing straight here, it works. That's what control. If it was level, it wouldn't work. See what I mean? So, what you want your students to say is, no way. Number five, combine with story. Combine with story. Thomas Edison, when he was 12, 13 years old, he knew about this. He also knew about seedless powers. You go down to the grocery store or the drugstore and buy packets of seedless powder. Now, what that is a combination. It's really like our baking powder today. But you remember our formula here of acetic acid plus sodium bicarbonate? Instead of acetic acid, which is in a liquid form, it uses a tannic acid or something like that, which is in powder form. And it mixes that with the sodium bicarbonate. So it only activates when you add water to it. So you buy these powders, add water, and starts fizzing and producing carbon dioxide. Now, 12-year-old, probably 10-year-old Edison, he reads about this. He reads about how the seedless powders produce gas. He also read that they were filling up these balloons, big balloons in some cases, dirigibles, with gas, and they were floating. He put these two ideas together and decided that he was going to eat some seedless powder, drink some water, which would produce gas in him, which would allow him to fly. And then he changed his mind, and he decided it was his friend. True story. Well, the part about him thinking he might do it himself first may not be true, but the part about he had a friend that would just worship him. And whatever he said, he would do. So he had told his friends, he said, you know, I think, again, he had two bottles of seedless powder. He said, I think you better take both. So his friend just took down both, and then gave him some water to drink. And he's there looking at his friend. And his friend is... Edison said, well, are you, you know, is there gas? You feeling gas? Well, he said, well, look, I think you're going to have to flap your arms a little. So his friend is there, and he flapped a couple times, and then he collapsed. And he was majorly sick for several days, weeks. Okay, there's a story. That, and there are hundreds of good stories like that that connect and can kind of help rivet into it. Notice I'm using that to, again, make this idea that an acid plus a base has a particular kind of reaction that produces a salt. Now, you say, where do you get stories like that? Well, you collect them. You have to go after them. But when you find a good story, when you hear a good story, you write it down and you add it to... One of the things I do is every subject that I teach, every course that I teach, I have a file where all my notes are in, and I have a section, new stories or new things to consider. So I'm going to be teaching a class here in a couple weeks again, and I just last week opened that file up, and there was a number of items at the beginning of the file that said, the next time you teach this, here are things to integrate. Here are ideas. Might be stories, might be... ways I'd like to teach it differently, but it's a way I found to organize so you don't... At one point, I collected a lot of stuff and I never used them. But here, I put them into the places, into the files, where I think I probably will have a chance to use them. Okay, that was number 5. I'm going to stop there for a moment. Questions or comments? 6. Sometimes end... with why. One of the best ways to cultivate wonder is to show or tell a discrepant event without explanation. And just say, why? Why do you think this is? And don't answer it. You don't have to ever answer it. Some will take that and run with it. You know, here's one I kind of like to use occasionally, and that is, you know, if you go to a toilet, and if you take, ten gallons of water, and if you slowly pour those 10 gallons in, it'll just keep, the level will basically stay the same in the toilet, and it will never flush. But if you take a gallon, and you just dump it in all at once, it will flush. You don't have to hit the little doohickey to make it flush. It'll just flush. Just pour a gallon of water in. By the way, if you ever, you know, had a situation where the toilet bowl won't flush, just get a gallon of water, dump it in. It'll flush. Well, assuming a few things. Okay, so I just tell them to say why. Why is that? Some 2 or 3 students will go and try to figure that out. They might research it, but they also might experiment. I don't care which way they want to do. So, just sometimes end with why. Here would be another example of that. So, although this one can be used, this one's a great demonstration for a lot of things. But basically, I mean, here's how we could do it in the way I'm talking about. If I take a tuning fork, this is a C. Can you hear that? Maybe a little bit? This is a E. Number 7. Go big, get dangerous. Oh, here again is where I wish. Have you ever seen where you take a vacuum cleaner, the one that will blow, you can connect it up so it blows rather than sucks, and you can put, say, a ping pong ball in the flow of air and it just stays there? That's pretty neat, isn't it? But you know what's even neater is to bring in a leaf blower and then put a nice size ball in there and get that to suspend. That's what I'm talking about here. The other day we did little pop cans on the hot plate. You want to go big? You want to get dangerous? Get a 55-gallon drum. And get a flamethrower to heat it up. And then put the cap on that thing and then spray her down with water. And it really is, it can be kind of dangerous because there's times in which it won't collapse. I mean, it takes a lot of pressure to collapse a 55-gallon drum. I had a friend who liked to do this, and he got 250. He was on his way home from work, saw 255-gallon drums for sale, paid $5 each, took them home, did them both. The one collapsed nicely. The other one didn't collapse. And he said, "Ooh, now what do I do?" So he picked it up gingerly, and he took it and put it in his backyard. And don't you, a couple days later, they went out there and it had collapsed somewhere along the line. But yeah, go big, get dangerous. Take some. I don't have stuff to do that here, but I may have that paper. Okay, so I mean, here's just a small example of that. One of the ways that I illustrate acceleration due to gravity is by dropping stuff. I mean, we just already did that. We drop things. But of course, when you drop a piece of paper, that's not accelerating at 9.81 meters per second. We can talk about air resistance and so on. But it's kind of neat, I think, to show how that... See, this book, if you drop it, it does drop at 9.81 meters per second squared. And if we drop this piece of paper on top of the book, it will also drop at 9.81 meters per second squared. But now, we can do that, but what's even better is if you... Every science class needs a ladder in class. What is it about this that just adds to the drama of it all? And so you could drop this. And then while you're up here, you can have a bottle with a hole in it so that... And water in the bottle, you release the to have a piece of tape on the hole, take that off, and so water will start streaming out, but when you drop the bottle, it will stop. That's kind of a neat way to also see some of the things associated with free fall and acceleration. So go big, get dangerous. Number 8. Point to God in authentic, fresh, unique, creative ways. Point to God in authentic, fresh, unique, creative ways, not always with words. Sometimes it's by asking questions. Sometimes it may be giving quotes. I'm going to give an example in just a moment. There may be some scriptures that really work well with your students. The heavens declare the glory of God, I think, is one that can be used. The Lord our God is one. We talked about that this morning. Songs and poems and so on. These are just ways to kind of orient the mind toward what's happening in science class. Stay attuned to your students. What is it that genuinely calls them to God? And where they're saying, yeah, that really is powerful. That's significant. We need to avoid the wonder busters here. Tacked on scriptures are an example of that, where we just have tacky scriptures. I've seen in a Christian bookstore an egg separator, you know, one of those things with wires, and it's had a verse on there, "Nothing will separate us from the love of God." So, to do is just do a... this is maybe more mathematics than science, but the two in my mind are just so interwoven. And if I may suggest to you, somewhere along the line in life, please take a math-based science course. When you actually integrate the two, that's when you maybe start seeing something different about both math and science. Upper-level chemistry and physics courses are that. I want to talk for a moment about five of the most important numbers in mathematics. What would they be? Can you give me five most important numbers?
Pi.
What?
Pi.
Pi is actually one of the five. Good. Can you give me another one? We'll put pi up here. And of course, we know pi is one of those non-terminating, non-repeating decimal numbers, 3.1415927, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just, it's a beautiful number that keeps showing up. And, you know, when we describe light, the movement of light, we have to use pi to describe it. When we talk about round things, we use pi to describe it. I gave an example this morning. And pi just shows up all over the place. What are the numbers? Five most important numbers in mathematics.
Nine?
It's an important number, but it's not one of the top five.
Just a wild guess, zero?
Zero, good, thank you. And of course, this one, you didn't learn zero for a long time in your life. Do you remember when you learned zero? Zero is tough. And it wasn't just tough for you, it was tough for mankind. We didn't conceptualize zero for quite a while. When we did, it revolutionized our understanding of the world. So, what did we know before zero?
One.
And of course, if you have one, you have two, three, four, five, and all the other whole numbers. Okay, so we have three of the five. Can you give me the other two?
Is it negative one?
Close. Close.
I.
What?
I.
Is that what you said?
Square root of negative
yeah.
One.
I. Or... square root of negative 1. And then one more, and I'll give you a clue. It's also a letter, or we use a letter sometimes.
X?
No.
E.
Yeah, X. Ooh, that's... yeah, who said E? Somebody said E? E is the other. Okay? Now let's talk about those numbers a little bit. We know why one is significant. Zero it gives us a placeholder. We talk about all these things for a while. What time is it? See how much time I have to talk about these things. Let's go to E for a moment. So E is a number that also keeps showing up in the world. And if we are studying nuclear decay, say from radioactivity, it declines over a period of time, and the equation that defines the loss of energy includes E in it. Here's an example where E shows up. Imagine, oh, by the way, I didn't even tell you what E is. Does anybody know what E equals?
MC squared.
What did you say?
MC squared.
E equals MC squared. That's a different E. That's energy. This is 2. Anybody know?
7 something.
Yeah, 2.71. Well, it's also a non-terminating, non-repeating decimal. So if you wanted to keep going, 2.718, actually it should be 2.72. 2.71828, etc. Now, we'll illustrate where it's one place that it shows up. And there's hundreds of places it shows up. Here's one. Imagine that you have $100 to invest. And you go down to your local bank, and your bank says, yeah, we'll put that on interest, and we're giving 10% interest right now. Which right now, that would be a big deal, wouldn't it? So what that means is that if you have $100, over a year's time, at the end of a year, they will give you $10, 10%, or $10 more. So you'll have $110. Now that's if they calculate the interest once at the end of that year. So you see how this works. Now let's say, you say, oh, what's the best I could get? And you found a bank that would give you the best, which would be 100%, let's say. Okay? We'll give you 100%. That means if you have $100 at the beginning of the year, you'd have how many dollars at the end?
$200.
Now, let's say that that same bank said, oh, we're, or no, another bank said, yeah, we give 100% interest, but we compound semi-annually. Not just once a year, we're going to do it twice a year. So that means that after 6 months, they're going to take your $100 and they're going to say, what is 50% of that? Half the 100%. And they're going to give you $150. Now, at the end of the year, they're going to say, what is 50% of 150? And that's going to be 75. So you're going to now have $225. Everybody following this? Okay. So this is a better bank, right? The first bank was just giving you 200. This one's giving you 225. Now you go to you're on a roll now. So you go to another bank and they say, oh yeah, we compound quarterly. And I'm not going to go through all the math there, but if you went to that bank, instead of $200 or $225, they would be giving you $244. And you say, oh, I wonder if there's a better bank. And you finally find one that compounds, that gives you 100% interest annually, and they give you, they compound it continually. It's not semi-annually, it's not quarterly, it's not monthly, it's not daily, it's every moment. And you say, oh, how would you calculate that? That's called calculus. And calculus is a beautiful mathematic. But if you go to that bank, you know what your amount's going to be at the end of a year?
271.
You got it. $271.82. In other words, it's E. That was the number that would guide the growth for 100% continual compounding of interest. Now, that's just one example. We could give you many more. It's a beautiful number. Did they ring the first bell? I didn't hear it, but they did ring it. Okay. Now, we'll have to bring this to a close. One of the greatest mathematicians of all time, Euler, discovered that these five numbers actually have an amazing relationship. And it looks like this. E, that number we just worked on. You know this, it's also one of these non-terminating, non-repeating decimals. E raised to the pi, 3.1415927. Oh, and we didn't talk about I, did we? I is equal to square root of negative 1. You see, the question is, if you have where on a number line do you put the square root of negative 1? It doesn't exist on a number line like this. So here's this number that doesn't even exist in any kind of meaningful way for us. And yet, it's e raised to the pi times I plus 1 equals 0. And I quote from an MIT atheist professor, there is no God, but if there were, this formula would be a proof of his existence. Now, okay, I gave that as an illustration. Notice what I did. All I did was use one little quote at the end. And it was not a cliche, but it was something that clearly pointed to that there's something here. Maybe I don't even completely understand it or whatever, but there's something here that ones who, even an atheist who does understand this says, oh, it almost makes me believe in God. That's powerful for students. You're dismissed.